anything that, you know, that you would like to. I'd start off with and just ask how you came to Harford County.
I got born there.
You did?
And I've always lived on the post road most of my life. There's a few other times. Let me put that over here for you.
Oh,
well, Davenport, any old place.
And where were you born?
I was born in the Rigdon House, which was torn down to make the road to the Aberdeen Proving Ground. And they tore that down and made that big wide road. And I had company one time from New York. They said, "Where were you born?" I said, "Let's go look." And we went out, and the house was gone. The road was established. I hadn't known they'd torn it down. Felt very foolish. And then later on, I lived in the Wheeler House on the Post Road, which belonged to my grandfather, Bram. And we then moved to a house across from Ames's, which my father and mother built. And I lived there until I was married. And as you see, I'm still living on the old post road.
Mm-hmm.
So I just came, excuse me, right up the line. Strange, wasn't it?
Oh, it sure was. What did your parents do?
My father was a farmer. His father was a farmer and a canner. They all farmed, but my father was the one really who liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And as the brothers and sisters died, he bought their land and continued to farm until he died, which he was killed in an automobile accident up near Albany, New York. He was going to Quebec with his sister and brother-in-law,
mm-hmm.
and just on a trip, people came over a bridge, ran right into him broadside, killed all three. Wasn't that awful?
Mm.
Cleaned me out was all the family I had, except my children and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember much about your house on Post Road?
I don't remember the one I was born in,
uh-huh.
but I remember the Wheeler House, which I now own,
and
also the house across from Ames's, which was a very nice house at the time,
mm-hmm.
and my parents built that. And I went to school from there on a train every day to Havdegrass.
You did?
Uh-huh.
What, now what
I had
school?
To be on the train at 7:45 in the morning, which was pretty early.
Yes. And you came into which school here?
Havdegrass on Congress Avenue. They tore that down several years ago and built a new one, but it was a very nice big building. I think it was built in 1896, that building, as far as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And the bell for it is up here in front of the firehouse. It was on the roof.
Oh. Do you remember much about what the school was like?
Oh yes, I do. My first year I went to Aberdeen School from the Swan Creek area because my aunt was a school teacher there, and I rode with her. Colored man drove us down with a horse to Aberdeen to school, came and met us in the afternoon. And as my parents at that time were not living close by, it was easy for me to stay there and go with my aunt and go home weekends, which I did. But I loved it at my grandmother's, and I never liked to leave, but I was there a year, except for weekends. And after that, I started to have to go to school on the train. I was then big enough to go on the train.
Do you remember what was the train ride like?
Yes, it was only from Oakington to Havdegrass. It wasn't far.
Uh-huh.
But school children were on that all the way up from way down Magnolia. They came on that train, you see, to schools. I don't know why, but a lot of children on this train.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of children went on over to Perryville and continued to on the other railroad to Tome School.
Hmm. Well, now, do you remember much about what the school, what did you do, you know, while you were at school?
Oh yes, we studied reading, writing, arithmetic, and spelling. It was very pleasurable. I liked school as far as that's concerned, but I was always glad to get home to the country. When I got home, I always ate something and ran out and played all over the farm. Rode horses and had a good time. I had a very nice childhood.
Now what was the farm like?
Well, it was just like any other farm, I guess. My father had bought 155 acres. And later, when his father died, Aunt Rosa, his sister, sold to my father her farm, I mean, left to her, my father her farm, which was Black Walnut, which I now still have. And he bought the one Uncle Tom had, which I still have. But Uncle Freeborn's was sold to some man was in the junk business, and he sold it as a dump place, which is now discontinued, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But they took very good care of it, and it looks all right now. It's all grass and taken care of.
Did you?
But that land adjoins some of mine.
Did you have your own animals and things?
Oh, of course, mules, everything. Even a pet goat. And my father liked raising hogs. His brother liked raising sheep. But Papa never cared for sheep. He just raised hogs, horses, cows, calves, you know, and sold them. Mm-hmm. It was a very pleasurable life. Mm-hmm. And my father was a great homes person. He never hardly went anywhere. But my mother was Maud Schur, had a beautiful voice and sang all over. And really had a beautiful voice. But she died at 60. My father lived to 81 when he was killed, mm-hmm. but he was perfectly well, not sick. Mm. It was an awful loss.
Yeah. Well, now, I guess you remember when there wasn't any Route 40 at all.
No, there was. No, sir. We used the Old Post Road, and there was a covered bridge, you know, at the foot of the hill over the Swan Creek, which I enjoyed that very much. I used to go up the rounded part. And then hang by my arms and cross the bridge to the other side of the bridge, hanging by my arms on an iron rod.
Wow.
I'd love to do that. It's a wonder it didn't fall. It was a very high height. Had I fallen, I'd have been killed. But you know, when you're little, you don't think of anything like that.
Well, now, what was Route 7? What was it like?
Well, it was a great big mill across from my grandfather's canning factory. A real big brick three-story building, which was wonderful. People bought their wheat and stuff there, and it was processed and everything into flour and so forth, and there was a mill race which ran and used the power, mm-hmm. and we weren't really allowed to do it, but we used to go up on the top of that and shoot down those bins into great, you could be drowned, or could be smothered into it, but it never happened. But we did that all the time for fun. Go down from one story to the other, you know, into great big wheat bins.
Oh. Now,
a man named Webb ran it at the time, I remember.
Hmm. Now, where
exactly
was it?
He had the first telephone out there at Swan Creek.
They did?
Yeah. My grandmother Brown was an English lady and came to this country when she was 13 and married my grandfather. She had three brothers who fought in the Civil War on the wrong side, as we say nowadays, mm-hmm. on the southern side. Mm-hmm. And when I went to school in Havdegrass, different people in my family were Southern sympathizers, even though we were Maryland. And the other kids called me rebel and made fun of me a great deal. Even the third grade teacher called me the rebel, which was unfair because the war was over before I was born.
Yeah.
But people were still holding it against you, hmm. some people, mm-hmm. which was strange, wasn't it?
It sure was. Well, what was Havdegrass like while you were going to
a
school?
Great big country town, very nice. We knew everybody practically on Union Avenue. Almost everybody we knew to speak to. And people would take walks in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and they'd had nice porches, as you still see, which nobody sits on anymore. Mm. But they had nice furniture and rugs on them, and you sat there and you'd take a little walk, and people would say, come up on the porch, and go up and sit for a little while, maybe 15, 20 minutes to this party, mm-hmm. and continue your walk, and somebody else would ask you on the porch. It was very pleasant. Mm. But at that time, I was living in the country, but my mother was a person, you know, who sang for the library and did all sorts of things like that, so we knew everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then her great friend was Mrs. Tidings, who lived in the next block, where Crawfords now live. And she was a very outgoing person. My mother liked her very much. Mm. They'd come out to our house on Sunday and have music, and all sorts of people would come and play violins and sing. My mother played the piano and organ. And sometimes there'd be a line of buggies and horses Sunday evening, and a stop along the road, one right after the other, listen to the music. And then we had dances on the front porch, which was 56 feet long. And the music would come out of the living room, you know, and they put the chairs out in a circle, and all the people would sit there and get up on the porch and dance. It was very pleasurable. Hmm. And then Mama generally had the people for Sunday evening dinner. But she was a wonderful cook and a wonderful musician, and also an artist, taught pastel and oil painting too. So they had a lot of people guests, you know, for Sunday evening supper was a big time. Mm-hmm. And music afterward. Mm. I had a nice childhood. Mm. I wasn't expected to do anything but just live and go to school. But I've made up for it since. Worked very hard.
Well, now, let's see. You were married to a veterinarian?
Yes, sir. My first husband was Dr. Guy Hewitt Dennis, and he was from Perryville, though I had never met him until he was grown up and graduated. And he graduated in June, and we were married the following February 5th. And so that marriage kind of blew up after 19 years and a half, much to my surprise. And I got a divorce, and then I started to really make my own living, which was very difficult without any training. But with a willingness to work hard, I managed to get along fine. I took two, this was the main road then, you know. So I turned this house into a tourist house and rented places people sleep overnight. That was how it started. Then when they changed the road over to Route 40 and made that new road, then I converted to apartments. In the meanwhile, I inherited the place at 213 from my father, and I converted that to apartments from being just a house. Then I started building as I could, and building apartments, and that's my business now.
Well, now, what was it like working for a veterinarian? Did you help?
Oh, yes. I sure did. I answered the telephone, managed a 9-room house with only one servant, and waited on the people coming and going, tended to their children while they worked with the dogs, or whatever they brought. But most of the business at that time wasn't like veterinary do today, just dogs and cats. We did circus animals, lions, hyenas, elephants, anything that got sick. And the Wheeler Circus, you know, wintered for several years here in Havdegrace, so we did their work complete, and not only that, other circuses. In fact, we had an opportunity to travel with the circus for a good salary, but we didn't decide to do it. The children need to be parked, you know, and go to school. But in that case, they give you a railroad train to live in, like a bungalow, and you get your meals all served, you know, at the big dinner. Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
I would like to have seen the country that way, but we just couldn't do it. Children wouldn't have proper schooling or anything.
Do you remember about where the circus, the Wheeling Circus, was stored?
Right over here on Stoke Street. A place that we cleared out, that was a great big building. And there was an aisle down the middle of it. And there were wild animals on each side. And you walked down there, if one was sick, all the animals got disturbed.
Oh.
The elephants would trumpet. The lions would roar. The horses would be very restless and sometimes even whinny. I remember one night they called us that they had a hyena had chewed its own foot off and got blood poison. They wanted us to come kill it. You never heard such an ungodly noise as that thing was making.
Oh.
It was about 12 o'clock at night. So I went with him because I'd have to hold the cups or things that they had the medicine to kill the animal. It was very dangerous to fool with a hyena. They're one of the worst things you want to work with. And you have to get something from each side of the mouth, through the head, you know, through the mouth, and tie it to the cage, because they'll bite you, you know. And of course, this thing was in terrible pain and really out of its mind, so it was very hard to handle. But he did manage to kill it. But in the meanwhile, all the animals know a thing is dying. Instinctively, they know it. So the lions roar, the elephants swing their trunks like this and carry on something awful. You think they're going to break loose. And you have to walk down this line between all these animals to get to the far end where they had the doggone thing at the other end of the building. But it worked all right. We got it killed.
Well, that was really quite a difference from how, you know, you had grown up.
Oh, yes. Except that I grew up on a farm where I was used to animals.
Oh.
And I had ridden horseback and driven horses from the time I was little. I could drive a carriage and have mules follow me to take them in to be shot. I've done that. And then when I was real young, I could go to Baltimore and buy things from Papa Need for the farm. And I could change, you know, get to Baltimore and change streetcars and go wherever I had to get the parts and come back. That was because of my experience of going to school on the train. I wasn't afraid to go to Baltimore, see.
Oh.
So I could do that when I was very young.
Now, what was Baltimore like during that time? Do you
Baltimore?
Remember?
Well, I remembered all right. You had to take streetcars here and there and transfer from different corners to get up where the things would be, you know. And then, of course, we had a big white machine. and had to take parts, go get new parts for it to cut wood. That was down, I think, on Charles Ann Street, down way down there in the far left side of southern side, like a Baltimore. Mm-hmm. It was all over Baltimore. We went for different parts for the farm. Mm. And then we had signs on the place, and I used to, when I was real young, go down to collect, they wouldn't mail it to you. And they'd put you off and make you wait for hours to get your check. But I sat patiently and read, and I finally got the money. But why they didn't mail it, I don't know. Mm. Funny, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. They'd get months and months behind. Papa liked to get some of that money toward the taxes. Mm-hmm. And we had this very good place for such a thing, because it faced the railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad, went through our land, and also the big road, the post road, was in front of us. So the signs were a lucrative thing, but I didn't like them. I didn't think they were very pretty, but they did help with the money situation.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now, what about, what was this Route 7 like at first? Was it paved? Do you remember?
No, sir, it wasn't paved when I first remember. It was muddy.
Mm. Was that difficult for people to drive?
Oh, the horses put. You didn't have cars in. I remember the first cars that came around here. Mr. Harry Lauder, who ran a store across from the old movies down here, had one of the first ones. And Mr. Johnny Michael, who was Papa's cousin, had one called a Moon. Great big black car. Uh-huh. And he was very generous about it, picking up everybody along the road in his beautiful car. He'd pick them up and give them a ride if he was going to Havertagrass or Aberdeen. He also was the founder of the Citizens Bank down here, which has now been changed to another name, I forget what it's called, but it was the Citizens. He was a very nice man, Mr. Michael.
Well now, you said Havertagrass was a nice little country town. What were some of the things around here that you would go to, you'd come to town for?
Well, they had moving pictures. We had two, believe it or not, right down, only a block down the street from us. The I think it was called a Bijou, B-I-G-O-U, and Willow. That was for Mr. Will Bauer and Mr. Lou Vosberry, who started it. And they took their combined names and called it the Willow. Uh-huh. It survived the other one longer. Are you leaving now, Graham?
No, I'm in and out.
Okay.
And what did you go and see? Can you remember?
Well, there were black and white movies. I don't like those now. I never look at black and white movies. But those, they were the only thing we had. And we'd drive a horse in from Havertagrass. And tied, they had hitching posts all along the front street here. They also had awning things. And they hung the beef and stuff right out on the street. Wasn't that nice and sanitary? But anyhow, that was the way it was. And the children went along doing stunts on these overhead hanging pipes.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
I didn't do that, but the boys did.
Mm-hmm. How much did it cost?
It started 5 cents and got to 10 cents. And the last, I believe, was about 25 with a cent or two for the state.
And
you'd, a lot of people go to both of them, of course, if you had the time. You'd go in this, they were right next door to each other. So you'd go in this one, see that picture, come out and go in that one.
Hmm.
But in comparison to the lovely things we have now on television, they're very crude, but we didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. What other things did you do for recreation?
Well, I rode horses. I also helped anything I could do, my father on the farm. I enjoyed any outdoor stuff. I didn't do indoor work at all. Mm. My mother would say, my grandmother lived with us, you know, for the time I was a year old. And so there were two ladies and a colored lady. They were three women in and out of the kitchen. They didn't want me. Mama would say, go on out. You know you'd rather be helping your father than in here. Go on out. She'd get rid of me. Wouldn't show me a thing about it. So when I got married, I'd never done any cooking or anything.
Mm. Well, now, what was the waterfront along here like?
The what?
The waterfront. Did you have much?
Oh, yes. We went swimming. And the lighthouse used to be beautiful. That old building has now been converted to sort of a drinking place of some kind or other. Mm-hmm. And the lighthouse, and Mr. O'Neill lived there. He was the lighthouse keeper. And all that was beautiful grass right down to the water.
Mm.
Now it's terrible looking. Except for the lighthouse itself. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And you would go swimming in the water?
We've been swimming in the water all the time, yes, sir. Hmm. The water wasn't polluted like it, they say it is now, you know. Nobody thought about it anyhow, if it was. Mm-hmm. And then later we had a mayor named Mr. Robert Pennington, I believe, and he fixed a beach down there that had sand and all put and children. That was just a little later. That did my children some good. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have that when I was little. Hmm.
Did you ever catch crabs or anything along the
yes,
water?
Yes, we used to go down to Basutia Island several times a year, and being friends of the Tidings, and he had a big boat that he controlled that belonged to Vandiver, who was the treasurer of Maryland, and he would every year he'd take groups of people down just for a favor, you know, and we'd go down there and we'd boil corn out of the farms they allowed us, take corn and boil it along the shore and catch crabs and eat those and boil them, you know, first.
Hmm.
It was a lot of fun.
Hmm.
And my grandfather Brown not only was a canner, a second canning factory, I believe, in the county, but he also had fishing shore rights. He paid for the shores off where the racetrack used to be that now belongs to William James. Mm-hmm. He used to hire that every year, and the big carriages would come down from Pennsylvania, covered like buggies,
mm-hmm.
and they'd buy all these fish and take them back. And see how they made such a long trip, but they did. And took these fish back up to Pennsylvania, you know, to preserve to eat in the winter.
Hmm.
And there'd be a long lane of carriages coming out. But that was before my time. I don't remember. Only my father and grandfather talked about it.
Hmm.
Then my grandfather also owned a big fishing float. He didn't allow anybody to drink on the fishing float. And when they did, he discharged them. So he discharged one man named Todd. He went back that night and burned the fishing float down to the water.
Ooh.
So my grandfather just sold that big block of wood, you know, whatever they call it, like a big platform,
mm-hmm.
and didn't do that anymore.
Hmm.
But he didn't allow any people to drink there. He was afraid they'd get drowned.
Mm-hmm.
And it was dangerous anyhow, drawing up those, they have horses to pull these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be very careful.
Hmm. That's something. What do you remember about the racetrack?
Right much. They tried to buy my father's 50-acre field across the Ames on the other side of the railroad because that was on the main line instead of having to have a sidetracks, which they eventually did.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to buy that land for my father, but my father loved the land. He didn't want to sell it for a racetrack.
Mm.
So he didn't. But then they bought it up near Havertagrace, where it still is now, you know.
Did you ever go out to the racetrack?
Every day. We had the, I suppose, a courtesy. They sent us tickets, a clubhouse ticket each year,
mm-hmm.
For Mr. and Mrs. Brown and one other person. So one man could go and take two ladies, absolutely free,
mm-hmm.
and these were sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't suppose everybody, just to certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And we did get that for years and years, as long as the Havertagrace track was there.
Mm.
But I never cared for gambling myself, and neither did my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And my father wouldn't even go, so we could always take other strain. Papa wouldn't even go. I don't think he ever went once.
Mm.
He was so intent on farming, he loved it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, what was it like in town during the race days? Was it real
busy? It was really a complete different town. Everybody took rumors in. For the 2 weeks each spring and fall, it was April and September, I believe, and that people would take them in their homes, and they all got along very nicely.
Hmm.
Of course, there was a lot of the, I suppose, rough stuff going on outside of that we didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard since, but I didn't know about it.
Hmm.
And we drove horses to get there, you see, but there weren't many automobiles then.
Mm-hmm.
But that soon changed, and almost everybody got an automobile.
Hmm. You had spoken about the Tidings. Now, is that Millard?
Millard Evelyn Tidings was raised right up here, I suppose, even born there, right in this house you can see on the other side of that last little bank.
Mm-hmm.
People named Crawford live there now.
And you grew up with him?
I knew him all my life. You see, my mother was a great friend of hers.
Oh.
So I knew them very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to come out to our house all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, were they always interested in politics? Or?
I think the the man in the first place went to the Maryland school, you know, down here. Mm-hmm. And his father was a very odd kind of a man, very stern. He was very hard on the son. Everything he did, he punished him for. And he was a very industrious boy. He used to get up early and walk the bridge to Perryville, come back on a train with a lot of papers, and deliver them around town. The papers were then left over in Perryville. Isn't that funny? Hmm. So he did that for years, and he worked in can factory, did anything he could. And I remember the day that he was to go to college, he'd won the scholarship. But his father had to put up a certain amount of money. And he wouldn't tell the boy whether he was going to do it or not till the last minute. So Millard said to his father, "Are you going to let me go or not?" This was the morning he was to leave for school. And he says, "If not, I'll go back to can factory and work the rest of my life." But his father evidently came up with some money. And he went. And he was very successful. He was a very pleasant, nice boy, hard-working boy. He deserved everything he got.
Now, he really turned, as I understand, politics really around him, you know.
Oh, yes.
He really...
Everybody liked him. Then he went to war. First he went to the Mexican War, and then he went to the other war, European First World War. Mm-hmm. I think he became a colonel, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But he was always a pleasant, nice person. Mm-hmm. And very ambitious. Mm-hmm. Some boys are not ambitious. They might have the same abilities, but they don't care to bother with it. Is that so?
Uh-huh. And so then, let's see, when did they live in Oakington?
When did he live in Oakington? Not until after he married, which he was an old bachelor when he married that lady. And he remained single till he was very, I suppose, middle-aged. Hmm. Then he married a lady, had two children, and he adopted them. And the one that became center one term, was one child was adopted, but it's called Tidings, but he isn't a Tidings.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And that the Tidings family were really...
Poundergrass people.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Tidings came from the other side of the bay. Originally, I don't know about that, but I think so. Mm-hmm. But she was born and raised here, and her father and her grandfather were lighthouse keepers.
Hmm. So they must have, was that the O'Neill family that did
That's the O'Neill family. Poundergrass was burned, you know, in that rum war. Mm-hmm. And the place they spared was this old St. John's Episcopal Church, because this English soldiers camped out there, so they actually didn't burn that. Isn't that awful?
Did you remember your parents talking about how they rebuilt Havre de Grace after that burning? Or
no, they weren't old enough to know that. You see, that was another generation ahead of that.
Yeah, because they really some of the finest buildings I think in Harford County are in Havre de Grace, the prettiest.
Yeah, I think so. There's a wonderful stone house down the street here on mm-hmm. the right-hand side. Very nice building. I don't know who owns it right now. Dr. Simon did until about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And his health isn't so good, so he sold it and bought a new house up on the hill. Mm-hmm. But he had lived there many years. Mm-hmm. It was built by a man named Spencer. And the house cost $70,000, and he went bankrupt. Mm. Isn't that terrible? But $70,000 in those days was a lot more money than it is now.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember when they put the hospital down here?
Yes, sir. That was 1912, I believe.
Now, how
and
did
that
they
house
that?
Was owned, the one they started in, it was a very nice big wooden house with a porch all around, very pretty house. And Captain Baker, one of the Baker families from Aberdeen, married a Miss Sumption, Maddie Sumption. And they lived there. They never had any children. And finally, after he died, she sold it and became a hospital.
And why did they, you know, make a hospital in Havre de Grace? I mean,
because we needed it badly. We couldn't, if anybody was sick, they had to be taken to Baltimore. In fact, my uncle's wife died from a miscarriage, bleeding to death from here to Baltimore, because there was no hospital. That was one example. Mm. There wasn't any way to even get her to the railroad. They had to put them, people in those days, in these little carriages with covers. They used to deliver groceries.
Mm-hmm.
They'd take people to a hospital by taking them to the Pennsylvania Railroad, putting them on the, what do you call that place where they had the mail, that car, on a cot, and take them all the way to Baltimore. This poor woman died because it had been a hospital with nothing to it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that terrible?
Mm-hmm.
Left one daughter who's now invalid down here in this hospital. She's 90 years old. Doesn't even know me when I go see her.
Okay. Well then, do you remember who were the doctors that were first in the hospital were?
There was Dr. Smith, Dr. Bay, Dr. Charles Foley, who was a wonderful doctor, Dr. Steiner. Those are the ones I remember. And some of the Aberdeen doctors also brought people, Dr. Crete, Dr. Kennedy. I'm not sure about the Kennedy, but maybe he had died, but he was a very good doctor and delivered my sister from Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm. And then how was it that they were able to build the newer brick building? Do you remember how they did that?
Oh, with a great, they were very kind about taking care of people. And there was a man with a lot of money who had formerly belonged to the people who build automobiles. What do you call that? A big concern. Anyhow, he had a lot of money. And he was bought the old home of, country home, of Jacob Tome, who gave the Tome School. And he lived there. And he had a son was hurt, and they took very good care of him down here at this hospital. And he donated a lot of money and helped him build. And of course, everybody else helped that could.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's in the third building. I think they tore down a whole lot now, and they're making it bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they need it, but it looks awful right now. And say it'll be a year before it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't. They needed more room, and the foundations wouldn't carry any greater weight to go up. So they had to tear it out and start again on one section of it. If you think of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever build, be sure you put lots of strong foundation. You might change your mind.
Do you ever remember the ice storms that we have in Havre de Grace?
You mean when the big ice came down the river? Oh, yes. We had chunks of ice 6 feet high, and the children would all go down there and jump from one block to the other. And they'd be all over the whole southern end toward the park.
Hmm.
Ice. You never saw such ice. You'd have to stay there till it melted. So naturally, being children, it was dangerous to go down there and do that with the water between, but we did.
Mm.
But Havre de Grace is a lovely place. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I love to travel, you understand.
Mm.
But I want to be sure I have a foundation to come home here to. Yet I hardly know anybody anymore because I meet strangers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the people I once knew are all dead. You see, I'm now 85 years old.
Mm.
And when you reach that age, almost all your contemporaries are gone. Isn't that funny? I can walk down the street and hardly know a thing except the people I deal with in business.
Let's see. I wondered about the flooding in Havre de Grace. You know, about Hurricane Agnes, you had a fairly
yes.
bad flood.
Well, a lot of people left town. In fact, all my family left but me, and I wouldn't go. I stayed here. And I had a lady renting an apartment on top floor. And she was sick. They took her to the hospital. Then they decided to close the hospital, and they carried the woman in and put her upstairs again in this house after they had said that everybody should get out. But I wasn't about to get out. So I stayed here alone. But most of my family went to Bel Air, stayed up there with my son, my granddaughters, and their little children all. And the lady that worked for me came back into town, and they didn't want to let her son bring her in. But she told them she was going to stay if she got out and walked. So they came down from that end of town, they let them in. But I stayed here a couple of days alone in this house, and they had a man stationed out here with a torchlight to keep people from driving up and down the street on account of the water's right at the end of here. So I would watch him when he wasn't looking. I walked down and look at the water. And then come back, and he never caught me. Funny. But that was very interesting. But it was very lonely in this house all by yourself. Mm-hmm. And the family wanted me to leave, but I thought people would come here, maybe break in. Mm-hmm. Or if anything was going to get flooded, I wanted to see what happened. Mm-hmm. But during the time they built the dam, there was a head engineer stayed here and rented for me, named Mr. Schatzel. And I asked him, I said, if this dam ever breaks, will it flood this house? He said, it'll come to the alley, which is, you know, about 200 feet below me. Mm-hmm. So whereas water might have come in this downstairs, it wouldn't go in the rest. Hmm. So I knew he knew what he was talking about. But I wasn't going to leave. And almost everybody left. The town was pretty stripped. Mm-hmm. Hmm. I went out in the yard, out in the side here, and asked a man to have coffee. He wouldn't even take coffee. And one evening they forgot to get that man. Left him an hour or so out there in the cold in a pouring rain. He was soaking wet. He was supposed to guard the street and not let anybody go down toward the river.
Mm-hmm. And that's about the only time that that's ever happened in this area.
Yes, sir, I believe so. They used to have what they called ice gorges, you know, before they had the dam, like I'm telling you about the big blocks of ice and all that. Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't hurt a house this far up from the water. We're two blocks up. But they said the water would cover all of Perry Point, because it's lower than here. Mm-hmm. And time that leveled all out into that big creek back there, you know, there's a big creek over there. Mm-hmm. The water would go back toward northeast rather than climb this hill up to this house. Mm-hmm. So the engineer told me.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you remember what Aberdeen Proving Grounds was like before it became the government?
Yes, beautiful farms. My husband used to do, and his father, you know, was a veterinarian, and his grandfather. The three generations were veterinarians for 112 years. Mm. So they did an awful lot of work, you know, all over the whole county. Mm-hmm. And as I remember it, there were beautiful farms, very handsome big houses, a lot of tenant houses too. And the government bought those and tore them down, just like they did Bainbridge when they took that. I was building when the Bainbridge was being torn down, and I needed some doors and stuff that were hard to get during the war. Mm-hmm. I went over there, they were burning mahogany doors out of these beautiful old houses and wouldn't sell me one. I had to stand watch them burn them, and I couldn't get a door anywhere. Wasn't that awful? Mm.
Doesn't make sense.
Mm. That was real destruction. That's the same way they did the Proving Ground. Broke up all those beautiful farms. They don't use half of it. And that land was good. Raised fine sugar corn and tomatoes. Those were the principal crops my father raised.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any thing around the water? Wasn't there a game? Some kind of sports game club that they had there that people would come to?
Dan Basushi Island? Mm-hmm. Very fine one. We used to do veterinary work there, you see. My husband did, and I was there many times. There was no bridge. You had to go over on a flatboat, drive your horse on that. And it was a real nice big house there where real, real rich people from New York had a club. Mm. But, of course, that was all done away with, too. Mm. They burned the courthouse, burned this great, beautiful place down, I heard. Mm.
Yeah, because that was supposed to be famous. What kinds of things did they go to hunt there?
Mostly canvasback duck, with all kinds of ducks. Mm. And they fished there, too. They were really rich people from New York. Mm. Vanderbilts and all sorts of people that you read in the paper about. Mm. But my husband used to do a lot of work on dogs down there. Rich people had dogs, also riding horses. So I went with him many times. Mm. And sometimes when he'd be operating on a horse or something, the men there would faint or get sick and couldn't help, and I'd have to help. Which, the fact that I was born and raised on a farm was a great help.
I think so.
I could hold a twitch on the horse while they operate. Do you ever see a twitch? They wrap it like a rope on a stick around a horse's nose and twist it. That takes the horse's attention away from what you're doing on the shoulder or whatever. Huh. So you have to stand, somebody has to stand and hold that. Also hold in the other hand a cup with some kind of medicine they're going to, or hypodermic or something, mm-hmm. while they get ready to operate.
Mm. Let's see. I wondered about the Bayou Hotel. Do you remember anything, how they built that?
Yes, I do. It was a very interesting proceeding. They got the stone up in Robin Hood, up the Robin Hood Road between here and Aberdeen, you know where that is.
Mm-hmm.
Up in that country, they had some very beautiful old stone. And they bought that and built that. And it was a very nice affair. We were there the night they opened it. We had a big ball and a wonderful dinner. The dinner was $15, which in those days was astronomical. Mm-hmm. So I remember the chicken we had ordered was bloody, wasn't cooked. So it had to go back to get it more cooked. They had so many people, I guess they couldn't get it all done right. So I missed the first opening dance, much to my distress, because I wanted to start out the first dance. Had to wait till the chicken came back to eat. It was a nice affair. It was a beautiful hotel. I'd like to see it restored and done something with. Just breaks my heart to see a good building like that hurt like it is.
Do you remember who was the one that had the mind to do it?
Had the money to do it? I can't think of the man's name, but I knew him and his wife and son, daughter.
Was there
anything
out
on that point?
But now I
don't think of the name. Sir?
Was there anything out on that point before the hotel?
No, just sort of a rough edge to one in the water. Nothing mm-hmm. built there that I know of.
It's a beautiful location.
Oh, it's a beautiful location. It's too bad that it couldn't have been kept up, you see. Mm-hmm. But when they took the racetrack away, that hurt the hotel so badly. And then the ducks became scarcer. And rich people didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
They broke it when they put it. Then they sold it to the Catholic Church to make a place for nuns. And nothing was, they lived, elderly retired nuns lived there some years. Then after that, Dr. Fuller, who owned it, converted it into small apartments. And they weren't done very well, they weren't attractive. Mm-hmm. Trying to make too many and not enough room.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't laid out for it, you know. Then they had that awful storm, that water came and destroyed all the underneath pinnings. Nothing. Building itself, but mm-hmm. the inside was all ruined.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was 20 years older, I'd get that place and restore it right.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to do it. I love building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it could be done. But the way they're fooling it just gets worse all the time. People vandalize it and all.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a beautiful place. It had like an enclosed patio where you could dance between two sections of the building.
Hmm.
And see the water and the moonlight on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice and had a big dining room from front to back on this end of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was really well, well run.
Hmm.
At one time it was partly done and wasn't quite finished and needed $50,000, and my father's cousin, first cousin named Worthington, loaned him the $50,000. I think she got it back all right. But she did when they got stuck loaning money. It could have been a very fine going concern if so many things weren't against it. They took the racetrack away, which was wrong to take that racetrack away from there. They said they didn't want people, they gave our days to other places
mm-hmm.
and just cut it out. All that money was spent there, and it was a beautiful racetrack. You could sit on there and see the water and the stables and wonderful view, beautiful place. I don't know what good it did them to do that.
Mm.
If they're going to have other races, tracks weren't half as pretty.
Why do they have all these little alleys and things in Havre de Grace? You know how it seems like there's little informal things, Strawberry Alley or Strawberry
yeah.
Lane and things. Do you know why?
They were done so that people had barns in the back. When I was young, they had barns in the back opening on those alleys where people had their own driving horses. When we bought this house, there was a barn out back, there was a cow shed, there was a grape arbor, there was a little whitewashed tiny garage up against that house. We had to tear all that out when we fixed this house over and bought it. Wasn't that funny? Everybody had their own little barn. They also had maybe a tenant house on the alley where the help that worked in the house lived. Most have been torn down. Some are still there.
Hmm.
But almost anybody that had any money had a driving horse. There was no other way to get around.
Mm-hmm.
No buses or anything. But if you wanted to go to Baltimore, they had good Pennsylvania Railroad trains to take you down to shop. All stopped here in Havre. They closed the pole. depot here and have to get us off completely and tore it down. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. That was a remarkable thing to do. Because many people don't have a horse and wagon, and they don't have an automobile, and they're too old to travel any other way. Mm-hmm. That I don't think should have been allowed.
Well, now, let's see. What about this, the fire department right there? Was that one time an opera house or something?
3-story opera house. The top floor completely burned off it, so they reduced it to a 2-height building.
Had you ever been there?
Oh, I used to go to everything there.
What'd they have? What kinds of
things? Well, they sometimes had stage shows, and then they would get up the cantatas and things of local people to make money for the library or the hospital or whatever. And my mother was always the chief singer and the one that ran it. She was one of those people, you know, who believe in all the public things and work for it. I never had time for all that, but she did.
Well, now,
she was a Shure from Shure's Landing. Her grandfather was the superintendent and paymaster of that canal that ran from Wrightsville to Havdegrace. It was lost in a big flood that washed out the towpath where the mules walked. Mm-hmm. And it never was over to cost millions of dollars at that time, so to restore a towpath that length. Mm-hmm. So they just stopped using it. Mm. But they used to bring coal and stuff from Pennsylvania down all that way to the river, and then take it and tow it to Baltimore. Also watermelons and all sorts of things like that. It was a very pleasant way to live. Mm-hmm. They had, Shure's Landing was a lovely place. I spent my summers there, that is one July each year, because my great-grandfather and uncles and aunts owned it. There were about 21 buildings there, all of which are gone. There were two wonderful fishing clubs of people from New York that rented places from them, where the rich people would come down and hire people, you know, to roam over looking for rockfish and everything before the dam. I've seen some of the most beautiful fish as long as this, rockfish. Never get those kind of things anymore. Mm-hmm. Beautiful fish. And they had china fish plates to cook them on, about that long. Beautiful. I'd give anything to have one. But I never see them anywhere that you can buy them. Not that I'd ever have a fish to fit it. Nobody would.
Huh. Well, do you remember when they were using the lock house, the canal house?
No, sir. That's before my time. They called that a hotel for the place. It really was a place for the drivers of the mules and all to stay. The regular hotel for ordinary people was the one they tore down right across from there. And the bricks from that I used to build a building down here at 215 South Union. I bought them from the owner and had to haul them myself, not to break them. That was a grand big hotel, and they tore that down. Now they talk like this other was the main hotel. It was not. It was a place for the mule drivers and the workers to stay. Hmm. Isn't that funny? But nobody seems to remember that around here.
Well, do you remember the Senecas? That the man that I think, well, he may have been counsel.
Stephen Seneca. Mm-hmm. He built this house right over here in the corner, which is catacorner from our police station that Dr. Walbert later lived in and was murdered in. Mm. It's a grand house. We were friends. My son was a great friend of Dr. Walbert, and so was my husband. In fact, he gave a big reception for me when I married the second time to Mr. Carlson. Mm. And 200 guests. He was a very nice man. That's the Seneca house. Mm-hmm. It's still there.
Now, some people say there's a cannonball in that side of the wall there. Is that?
There's what?
A cannonball?
Where?
In the side of the house somewhere?
I never saw it, and I've been all over it. I never even heard of it. Oh. A cannonball in Seneca's house? Uh-huh. Never heard it. You know, he had an only son. Very nice retiring wife. And this boy, he was running for mayor of Havdegrace, and it was very cold, wet weather. And the son was electioneering for him and caught pneumonia and died, which almost killed the family. And the mother closed all the blinds and everything in that house and kept him that way. Mm. She wouldn't let the daylight in, and she lost that boy. Mm. And he was buried with a ring just like that.
Oh.
This was my mother's ring.
It is.
Grandmother's, in fact.
Beautiful.
And it was a ring that he had one just like. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
And they buried him, and then they said there was dynamite in the grave, so nobody would go and steal to get the diamonds. He had diamond pins and diamond rings and everything. Hmm. Very foolish to bury anybody with all that. Hmm. But they belonged to him, the parents wanted. But Mr. Seneca was a very fine man. He was a great philanthropist. He helped poor people. He would buy a whole truckload or a railroad truckload, I call them, of coal, and put it on the siding and tell everybody they could go there and get it when they were poor and couldn't buy coal. All things like that he did. Then people that worked for him even gave little houses to live in. He was a very generous, nice man. He also gave this great, beautiful church you see down, Methodist Church, to the town. Oh. Isn't that a beautiful church?
It is.
Well, he paid for it and built it. Mm. On that corner used to be a Dr. Cochran. That was before my time, but he was our family doctor, and I heard him talk about him a lot. And he had a great big house and had all beautiful vases all around the yard. And these two vases out front of my house belonged in Dr. Cochran's yard. They were sold, you see, and my family had them. So I put them out here. I like them. They suit the house. But he had a lot of them. But these were the two largest and best ones. The others were smaller. But he was a very good doctor. And they tore that house down and built that church.
And that church is fairly old.
1900, I think. I remember, though, when they were building it, they dug out, and where those two houses back of it stand was a great pile of dirt. And on my way to school, I used to run up the path the children had and down the other side, you know, just for fun. And of course, then they put those other houses back there after the church was finished.
You have a lot of very large churches in Hampton Grace.
We do have good churches. Just this side of the Methodist Church, where you see that monstrosity of a modern house they put there for a preacher, that land was owned by an elderly Catholic spinster. And she left it to the Catholic Church to put a Catholic church there. But she kept living and living, and the Catholics needed a new church because where they had up here was near the railroad tracks and made too much noise that the priest couldn't preach. So they decided to buy that other lot a block away on Stoke Street and Congress Avenue, and they built the Catholic church there. Then after they got that all done, the woman died. Well, then the Catholic church didn't need another church, so they sold the land and the house that they had inherited from this lady to the Methodist Church, and they tore down a real nice, antique, good-looking house and put that thing up, which is ugly as sin. No value whatever for looks. Too bad, wasn't it? They should have modernized the big house she had. It would look much better in this town. But who am I to criticize people?
Well, that. Seems like a lot of French influence on that architecture, wouldn't you say? On the architecture, there's a lot of a very sort of formal, I don't know.
Well, there's a very old house across the street there. That's a good architecture. I would say that's rather on the French order. Mm-hmm. I think this is more English, this house. This house was built 1837, I believe, by Dr. W. Worthington Hopkins. And he bought the land from all the land that this house is on, and this house next door, and clear to the alley for $500 for a man named Charles Brown. Mm. And then built this house. And they had it 90 years, and we've had it ever since. Mm. I think we bought it in 27. I think it's 50, we've had about 52 years or so that I've been living here. That doesn't show much imagination when you stay in one house that long, does it? But I used to live in the whole house. And then when I had to make my own living, I had to do something with it. I could never afford the taxes and all, so I started in. Sent two boys to college, one 4 years and one two. Then the war came along and took them both. And I got them both back alive, which I think was nice. One in the Army, one in the Navy. This one that was here, he's my oldest son. He came out of a major in the heavy tanks. And the other boy was a commander in the Navy. So they both did all right eventually.
Yes, they did.
Worked hard at it. I'm so happy to get them alive home. Then the next war came along. My oldest grandson is a doctor, and he was sent to Vietnam. My next oldest grandson was sent on the Russian, sent out to college to learn Russian, then sent on the Turkish-Russian border for the termination of the war, and never could tell us what he did. I think he must have been doing spy work, you'd ask. And the other one was young and didn't get there. He was an aviator, but the war got over before they took him. Then he had to stay in a couple of years after, when he was dying, to get out, you know, and do something else. But he had to stay in. Then my granddaughter, their sister, married a man who was sent to Japan, so she went to Japan and could stay there. And her first child was born in Japan, which I don't think much of. But when she's 21, she has to then declare herself an American citizen. She has a choice. She can be a Japan person, or she can be United States. So that's the way. And I have 11 great-grandchildren, 6 girls and 5 boys. Pretty even. Then they're scattered. My children are scattered everywhere. This man's 2 daughters live in Kansas City. My other son's oldest son, the doctor, lives in Upper New York. His second son lives at Frederick, thank goodness. I do see him back once a month. And the other one is New Orleans, flies out over the Gulf of Mexico for Esso people, which is dangerous, filled with the oil and everything else. So I'm pretty well scattered. Mm-hmm. And I have a granddaughter as a teacher in Havertagrass, graduated at Towson. Mm-hmm. So that completes my family list.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. You've not known anything I've asked you. You really know Havertagrass.
I do know Havertagrass. You know, well, at one time I knew everybody I think lived on the street. Now I don't. They're all different.
Well, supposedly, where did Havertagrass get its name?
It was named by Lafayette, who was George Washington's friend. Came over here and helped us in the Revolutionary War, and we have a statue right down here, a couple blocks from here, in the middle of the street. You see that statue? Mm-hmm. That's Lafayette. Mm. And they used to stay all night in Havertagrass and wait till the tide came in to be able to get over to Perryville to go on with their horse and carriages to Philadelphia, wherever they were going. So Havertagrass at that time was a very much used place. Mm-hmm. But when they built the Route 40, they took all the traffic right out of here, which makes the place more peaceful. But doesn't help business. Mm.
Hmm. Do you remember what effect the Depression had on this area?
It was pretty bad. But we were slower getting in Havertagrass than most other places. It struck Wilmington. We had property, my husband and I, in Wilmington. People couldn't pay the rent at all. It was very bad. Started in Wilmington and all around before it really hit Havertagrass bad. Mm-hmm.
What did you do in those cases where they couldn't pay the rent?
Well, we kept them as long as we could pay the payments on the house, and we had to make a move. Mm. But it didn't do any good because nobody else had any money. Nobody had a job. Mm-hmm. So you really don't know what to do. But there are lots of people nowadays have the money and don't want to pay you. They just stay over a month or two on your charity and keep lying about it. And then they finally move or you put them out. Then they go and cheat somebody else. There are an awful lot of people running around, you know, that don't want to do right.
Did you have any activities around during World War I and II? Around in Havertagrass.
What sort of activities?
Well, doing your thing for the, either buying bonds or working.
I bought what I could afford, which wasn't very much.
Did people work in the different defense plants and things that they had?
Well, there weren't any nearby here, really. Oh. But they worked at the proving ground, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Some still worked there until they got too old to work there.
Hmm. Did you have rationing of things?
Only gasoline. That was the worst.
How was that rationed?
Well, they gave you coupons and didn't give you enough to run your business. if I hadn't had two sons in the service who sent me some of theirs, which they didn't need, I couldn't have hardly carried on. I was offered good property up in Bel Air to buy one time, and I couldn't boot because there's no way I could get back and forth to Bel Air to take care of it. Didn't have enough gas, and I couldn't buy a truck. My uncle was a lawyer, Freeborn Brad. In fact, his son is now still the same name in Bel Air. Maybe you know him, Carol, and they're my first cousins, though they're a generation behind me in age. But he called me one morning, he said, "Rosalie, get to Bel Air quick, because a man got a good truck here for sale." So I rush up there to get the truck. I needed one badly. The man sold it half hour before I got there. It was that quick. You couldn't get the truck. You couldn't get anything you needed. It was real rough. And you can't run this business without. I have two station wagons and a truck to run it now. You have to have one for the lady works for you to be able to take people out and show and go to work or clean up. And you have to have a truck for when you need that to haul furniture. And I have to have a car that I can take people out and do what I have to, see? And then my son is in this business. He has two cars. And the gasoline is really eating us up. I don't know what we're going to do about gasoline.
Okay. One thing, you said that a couple times you've talked about the library. Was there a library in Havre de Grace before the...
Oh, yes. We have the library. We've always had a library. And we have a library, a very nice one here. I don't know why they're worrying to get another one. Because this is centrally located. Old people who have time to read can walk there and get it. They haven't automobiles. Now they want to put it way out on Revolution Street where the Acme used to be. And how many old people living up here, 2 miles or so away, are going to walk down there to get a book? I think it's foolish. It's in the center right now, you know, and that's where it ought to be. Now, maybe they could enlarge this or do something like that. Mm-hmm. But to take it and put it way out on the outskirts of town, I don't think a library should be out there, do you? It doesn't seem sensible to me.
Well, where wasn't a Mrs. Steiner and all involved in a city library?
Yeah, Mrs. Steiner was a Dr. Steiner's wife, and she lived in the other half of the Crawford house that the Tidings lived on this side. You can see the over top of that building. See that peak up there? That's mm-hmm. the Tidings. Top of the roof. Uh-huh. And the other half of that house was Steiner's.
Oh. And did she start the library or?
I don't know. I think she was a very nice lady in her way, but very dictatorial and always had to be running everything, that type person. But he was a very mild, nice man. He got hurt in an automobile accident over at Perry Point and died. Mm. And she outlived him many years. She had two children, a boy and a girl. The girl was older. And the girl only outlived her about a year. And the son died earlier because he was on one of these boats out here when they had the big boat regatta, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was swimming and he was hit by the rudder of a boat and broke his leg and turned to cancer and died. But he was a very nice boy. Mm-hmm. I liked him very much. He was older than my children. About 2 or 3 years, but a very nice boy. Mm-hmm. And that was a terrible loss to that family. Mm. And the girl never had any children, so there are no descendants of Dr. Steiner, which I think is sad, don't you? Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, Dr. Foley was my favorite doctor in this town, Dr. Charles Foley. It's his son's down here. I don't know him so well. But his father was a wonderful. I had pneumonia very badly. And he came every day to see me, and sometimes 2 or 3 days really saved me. In those days, they didn't have things to save you from pneumonia like they do now. Mm-hmm. But he really, you know, used to make house calls, and he came up and saw to you, really saw that you got better. Mm-hmm. And he worked hard in his hospital man here, too.
Mm. What is it that you like about Havre de Grace?
I like the quiet atmosphere. I like the fact I went to school here, and it was a town my whole life, you might say. There was a period when I was first married and lived in Oxford, Pennsylvania. And going from Havre de Grace, you were very friendly at that time. So I would speak to people on the street, and they would look at you like they never heard of it, you know. And I remember one time I had this boy in here, it was a baby in a baby carriage, and I went and buy vegetables. And there was a very tall, austere lady staying there, and I said something to her about it. Fruit looking fresh and nice. And she turned around, looked at me from head to foot, and turned on her heel and walked out. I was never so hurt in my life. Because here, everybody talked to everybody. And it wasn't my fault I didn't know any better. And after that, believe me, I never spoke to anybody. Didn't speak to me first. Wasn't that a strange thing for her to do? I was only 18, 19 years old, you know. And I came off a farm where everybody's friendly. My father even had a tramp house out there. There used to be so many people walking the roads, you know, that didn't have work. And they'd walk toward the south in the summer and come back in the north, and he had what he called a tramp house. And he'd let people stay in there, you know, they got recovered and we fed them. So it was just a small kind of place. It had two bunks in one end of the room and two bunks here that would hold four people. It had a built-in table with benches and a stove that we'd let them have wood for, wood coal, what do you call a chunk stove. That's what they call it. And those people would stay there. And you know, in those terrible times, there were people there that were doctors, lawyers on their, and they were walking, actually walking toward Florida to get out of the cold and hadn't any money. Mm. And all sorts of people, but none of them ever robbed us or did anything to us. But they just came in there and they'd stay a few days and recover and go on. Mm. Wasn't that odd? Yeah. Well, those times were very bad. Nobody today knows about them much. Now we have this stuff to help poor people, you know. They get so much money for not working, they don't even want to work. You can't hardly get anybody to come give up that social stuff to work for a regular job. They're afraid you'll lay them off or not go with the job would be too hard for them, so they don't bother. Why should they when they get a check every month? Mm-hmm. In some ways it's good, in other ways it isn't. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of that. People, you know, then another thing is the government will pay half their rent and they pay the other. So you accept a check from the government for the half and they don't pay their half, yet you, the government will hold you up putting them out because they've already paid for their half. Mm-hmm. So I don't take them at all. I can't afford to. They get in there and you can't get them out. And they won't pay. Sounds wild, doesn't it? I know if somebody was paying half my rent, I'd break my neck paying the other half, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would say.
Funny world.
Hmm. Well, now, let's see. We didn't talk much about your second husband, Mr. Carlson.
Oh, yes. Well, he was a gentleman, came from Sweden. I think he was 32 at the time with his wife, and they lived up in Hempstead on Long Island. And he worked up in building houses for people up there, and also worked when he first came over in New York City. On those high buildings, very dangerous sort of work, but he was a very good workman. So he came down and worked at Bainbridge. He built that big laundry, I think it was, over there. They had other things, and was a very good mechanic. So then he, that job closed, and he worked at the Aberdeen Proving Ground. And how I met him, he came and rented an apartment from us at 213 South Union Avenue. And when those jobs folded up and there wasn't any more, I hired him to build me a double bungalow at 213 South Union Avenue, which he did, and did a very fine job. And from then on, he worked for me for 8 years, and then we got married. Wasn't that odd?
Mm.
But he was a very nice man, very hard-working man,
mm.
and behaved himself, in other words. Didn't give me any trouble. But for a long time, of course, I went out with other people and had lots of friends, but finally I married him. So then we were married 21 years and a half, and he died of cancer in the stomach. We made one trip to Europe. We went to 9 countries. But after that, he made 3 trips back to his people. He had a lot of people in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't go on account of the business, so I didn't get to go. So the last trip he made, he came home, he just looked fine. And inside the 30 days, he was sick.
Mm.
So he had 2 operations at this hospital down here. Of course, none of which were successful. And they said he would live 3 months. He lived a year and 3 months.
Hmm.
It was a terrible tragedy for him because he was an active person. He didn't want to be sick, you know, didn't want to be in bed.
Mm-hmm.
But he finally died, and I buried him with the rest of my family.
Hmm. So I guess he helped you in your business as
well.
Oh,
yes. Billing, not the other part much. But he was a real good builder. He did this room here.
Did he? It's beautiful.
You see the work on it. It used to be plaster, and you had to paint it all the time. We had this up here was stone that far, and from there it's bricks.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a rounded edge. You couldn't put anything on it. So I decided to do this, and it's been a great pleasure to.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the business that you're in?
Yes, but of course I'm very old now. I can't run steps. I used to could do everything. I could help build the buildings, which I enjoyed doing, and I could take people out and up and down steps all day long. I can't do that anymore. Too old. That aging business is awful. You want to do it, and you haven't got the power. See? So it stymies you.
Yeah. Well, now, let's see, you have apartments and things, and you run it all out of
that room right in there.
Mm.
Yes, sir. I have a maintenance man, which is $7 an hour, and this other lady that works for me, she's very expensive too, because she works long hours, pay over the hour. And I need other people, but I can't afford any more than that, because the taxes have gone up 3 times, I think, in 10 years. Mm-hmm. They're threatening to go up again. They're really going to run people out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I buy, you get paint, $200 or $300 at a time is paint. And you have to, but these walls have saved me money. $215, luckily for me. All the walls in that whole building are like this.
Uh-huh.
So all you have to do is ceiling and windows.
Uh-huh.
Where the ones had a plaster, you have to keep painting because people are careless with them. They hang their pictures, make holes in them, and their dirty hands, and let the children play all over everything and ruin things, you know. And I take children because I think it's my duty. I don't take dogs and cats. If they have those, I don't take them. Because they ruin the hardwood floors.
Mm. Have you had any unusual experiences with renters?
Mister, I could tell you. It would take all week. I wouldn't even go into it. We've had people, one not long ago, out of 800 Lafayette, took all the furniture out. It's a furnished apartment. We've had people take out refrigerators and sell them. And I go to rent, the whole refrigerator's gone. I had an experience out at Swan Creek at the Wheeler House. About 2 months ago, they took that, cost me $500 to put a new refrigerator in. Isn't that awful? And you've no way of finding out who did it. They can claim they left it there and somebody else broke in. You don't know what to do. You'd have to have a policeman patrol all these places to keep up with it. Now, we didn't have so much of that years ago, but we're getting more of that all the time. They'd take a chair. They take a Davenport. They take beds, and they're great on taking mattresses. And you know how high mattresses are now, about $100. So they take mattresses. Or they put an old one somebody gave them in there and take your good one. Doesn't pay us to buy a cheap mattress. They wouldn't stand up. So they steal them. I tell you, it's something to keep up with. But I try to look upon it philosophically best I can. It's not easy. A person with a temper couldn't run this business. No, you have to be calm about whatever happens.
Well, what do you think will happen in Havre de Grace's future? What's going to happen here?
I hope it prospers. We had a terrible fire night before last and burned up. And some person can't even be recognized, and a lady was killed too.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in one day they cleared that building completely out of that street. Was something to see last night. I walked down and looked. They had great cranes and cleared the whole place out, this burned house.
Mm.
Got the bodies out and all. Wasn't that terrible?
Sure was.
I don't remember us ever having a fire abandoned to burn people up, but it did.
Mm. What about the shopping on St. John Street? That used to be a very elegant community.
Yes, well,
shopping.
There's not many of... I'll tell you what ruins Havre de Grace. The fact that people go to these big plazas and buy things instead of buying in their own town.
Yeah.
That's what does it. But I think they're going through a rebuilding circumstance right now. I see that they're doing a lot of work down the front street.
Mm-hmm.
But of course that fire was a blow. But I hear that the other people down there that keep stores are going to help those people to get started again.
Mm.
two big buildings burned. But the ones next to them luckily were brick and they didn't go. I don't know what anybody wants to build anything in a crowd like that except brick, do you? I wouldn't, or stone or something. I restored a house out in the country my father was born on the Overton Road with 40 pots of granite. Good thing I did it when I did, because now that place is closed down. You can't even buy it. But it turned out beautifully. Got pillars to the second story. That was my grandfather Brown built that place in 1860.
And it's beautiful.
It's a beautiful building. You ever see it? Be worth your while to drive in there sometime. It's straight off the bridge. You don't go around the road. That went. My father let them have that land to make that road in there because they had cut out a railroad track. And he donated. The road was wide like it is past that school. We sold the land for the school after Papa died. But he had that nice straight road right to that house. So he donated that to the state and they took it over. But it was a heavy gravel road, very good. Didn't get muddy or anything. So now they macadamed it. And then I did our macadam work from the their line of their road onto the house. I built that on rock. I wanted to stay there. I bought stone fences up in the upper part of the county from two different people and had them brought down there, and I had the thing dug out deep and these great big stones there. It took 2 or 3 years putting gravel for it to seep down before you could ever fix it, you see, permanently, in between the rocks. So that's the best road, I guess, in the county, I think. Got stone that deep.
Whoa.
And then this all this gravel and then macadam on top of that. But it was fun doing it. I like building. If I get born again, I want to be a man. I'm going to build night and day.
Why do you think you like to build? Is it you like the finished product?
I like the thrill of it. Going every day and seeing the thing progress. Seeing the walls go up, and I draw the plans for the house, and that's also a pleasure to see your ideas come to life. I built one 2 years ago at my great age, much to everybody's distress, but it turned out good. It's been rented ever since. I put a, you know, rectangular shape building, and down the center of it, I put a nice wide hall, and I put the bedrooms on that side with the bath and all that, and then on the other I had the living quarters. So anybody could go from one bedroom to the bath without being seen through the rest of the house, you see.
Oh.
And then back of the kitchen, I put the, in that hall, I had it indented and put in the washing machine, dryer, and all that kind of things. And that backed up against the kitchen stuff, a great long thing. And it's a nice place. I'd like to build another one. But the cost of it right now is beyond everything. You wouldn't believe what it costs just to keep the repairs up on all these places. People break the doors or the locks, and people go in and rob you. Strange, isn't it? Hard to understand. I had a robber on a Sunday afternoon about a month ago. Came in through the laundry, and this lady was cooking dinner, and I was sitting there. He came in from the laundry in that hall, went through my bedroom and into the bathroom, got my pocketbook, and got all the cards that I have, you know. All necessary. Social Security, hospitalization, cards to go through public parks, gasoline cards, everything. He took all that. But he didn't get the money in the other pocketbook. And I went in the bathroom, and here is a colored man standing with bushy hair, young man, standing in my bathroom going through my pocketbook. I said, "What in the world are you doing in my bathroom?" And I touched him on the arm. I said, "What are you doing here?" So he said, "Mr. Dennis said I could come in here." I said, "Mr. Dennis never tell anybody to come in my private bathroom. Besides, he's in Atlantic City." So he couldn't tell you. So he brushed past me and went on out. And I called the police. And they caught him down near the park. So I had to go to jail and identify him, which I did know him. I was just as close to him, closer than to you. So I knew him. So I identified him, and they put him in jail for four or five days, and let him out on probation. And last week, he went down to a place I have at 213, a big apartment building, looked in the mailboxes and got a man's key he left in there for his wife, and went up and robbed an apartment. Then the next day, he came back and broke the lock and went to the same place. Evidently, didn't have time to go through everything. And he broke the lock, and the man came home, and they were able to find him. So now he just got a 4-year course to go to jail for this break-in down there. What do you think of that? A young man with, they were all dressed up nice and clean and everything. And he hadn't enough sense after that first example. They let him off too easy. That's what the trouble is. They let him off awful easy. But now he's been given 4 years, so I hear. I didn't get into this last act because it was a different building for me. I let the people who you robbed go through with it. But isn't that sad? And it just goes on all the time. The steel furniture, refrigerators, anything they can get their hands on. And the funny part is the neighbors won't call you and tell you what's going on. I've yet to have a neighbor call and say somebody's robbing your place. They'll complain if they have a party and make a noise. You know, anything like that. But they won't do a thing if they see them taking your furniture. Mm. Mention it, and if I know anything about it, I'll tell you.
How about the old Lafayette Hotel?
Lafayette.
Which is now the
Yes. Mrs. Robinson ran that for many years, and after that, a young man named Fahey, the younger brother of the lawyer Fahey, who was Mike Fahey. There were two Mike Fahey's lawyers. The second was the brother of the man who owned that and ran it for years. And his sister married Dr. Falwell and lived across the street from me. She's now dead. Mm. And they came from a farm up on the top of the hill outside of Habergas that now people have houses built on. That was her father's farm, theirs. Mm. Before that, a family named Asherfeld lived there who were related to the rich people in Germany named Krupp that had the great gun factories and everything in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But their name was Asherfeld. And Miss Clara Asherfeld taught in the Peabody. She was a magnificent pianist.
Mm.
And the mother also taught music. She had a piano in every room and kids learning lessons in each room. How the woman stood at the noise, I don't know, but she did. Then an elderly lady, a friend of theirs, went there when they moved to Baltimore, and she missed them. She went there and hung herself in the hall of that place over the banister. And nobody missed her. She hadn't any children around here or anything. So finally the odor was so bad that they called in the Board of Health, and they went in there, and the poor woman was hanging over the banister in this great big hall in that place. Very nice old lady, but I don't know what I would do that for. She was old. And they cut the bag down, and the odor was so bad you could smell it all over the countryside. It was real hot weather. In fact, I was going to school at the time, and I smelled it too, but I didn't have sense to know what it was. Terrible. And she'd been a very nice lady here in this town. She used to live in that house down the street next to 213 on the corner, across from Vandiver's house. Vandiver was the treasurer of Maryland, I think 24 years, wasn't he?
He was.
Murray Vandiver.
Oh, I didn't have that.
Mm-hmm. And his brother owns the house that later the Donnellys had, the lady that taught me that.
Hmm. Now, wonder how Mr. Vandiver got to be treasurer?
Got elected.
Oh.
I think he was 24 years of treasurer of Maryland. Huh. Murray Lauder was named for him, and a man here in town in business. No relation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people named their children for him because he was an outstanding person.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what he was like as a man?
He was a sandy-haired, blue-gray-eyed sort of man. Not too tall, medium. He was a friend of my grandfather's. And I went to school with his daughter, named Dorothy, and he had a son named Robert, who lived quite a long while, but Dorothy married up in New Jersey and moved away, so I don't know much about her. A lot of people move away and you don't hear of them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But they lived in that big house right down there at the corner. I don't know, it's Bourbon Street or what. Just below, it's a 100 block, I guess, because it's next block to where I have a place. And his, Robert Vanover's daughter, is married to Mitchell. He used to have the place up here that sold automobiles.
Oh.
Remember that man?
Yeah. Arlie Mitchell.
What name?
Arlie Mitchell.
No, that's not the name. Harry Mitchell, I think.
Harry Mitchell.
He sold it lately, and some Italians have it now.
Do you remember when the Italians first came to Happy Grace?
The what?
The Italians.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I was going to the school here, and the first Italian children that entered this school were Prosper and Rosa Amato, and they were in my class. Prosper and Amato children were very smart children. Their father was a shoemaker, and they were extra smart in school. But the girl especially had to work awful hard, because she went home from school and she was apprenticed to a woman to learn dressmaking, and her mother had heaven knows how many children, and had to, but she had to go home and help, like washing dishes and working awful hard when she went home. But believe it or not, that girl studied and led the class. She was that smart, and he was smart too. So many years later, she got a job with somebody in Baltimore after she graduated, and she only lived about a year. She died, went into a decline and died, and she was so smart. Then her brother Prosper, I didn't hear from him for years, and then one day the doorbell rang, and who walked in but Prosper Amato? And he said, "You don't know me." I said, "Yes, I know you with Prosper." And he said, "Well, I married a German lady, and we're getting along fine." He didn't say if he had any children. He talked a few minutes and went out. And about a year later, I read in the paper where he died, and what he died of, I don't know. Then they had a sister named Tacy, who was a very good nurse down at this hospital. She was still living some years ago. I don't know about her now. But she had to stay home for years and take care of her mother, never learned to speak English. And all the children contributed money for Tacy to give up her nursing and stay home and take care of the mother. But the father died. He was a big, strong, very handsome man. But he drank. Isn't that a shame? And I don't know how many children they had.
Mm.
Every grade in school, I think there was a child. They were smart children. And then from there on, other Italian families came to town. And they mostly settled above the railroad bridge, which, you see, that thing was raised up in this town and really hurt this other end of town very much, because people who lived up there would move down this way.
Mm.
Not all of them, but a great many.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Italian people moved up there. Another fire.
Mm. Mm. Let's see. Do you remember them building the project out here?
Yes, sir.
Now, why did that?
That place was owned by a man named Lewis from New York. He also owned on the other side of Route 40, off there some land. And he had a wonderful house up there. Real fine old house. Brick. 3 or 4 stories high. Fireplaces in every room. The cellar was all full of wine cellars, you know, places to keep wine and all that. And he was from New York, and he had magnificent furniture up in New York. But he rented this place to people, which finally they burned it down accidentally, I suppose. It got the stove to it. But after it was burned down, I bought bricks up there and hauled them. And this sun porch on this house is built with the bricks from that building.
Hmm.
And the road now goes right where the building was, Route 40. It goes right over the building. And that bridge they just tore down led to his farm.
Hmm.
And this other land, this lower land, lower Bloomsbury they called it, that was upper Bloomsbury on this side. And that is now built with all these houses the government built, which has some nice streets and has some other awful trashy.
Now, why did they build them there?
Well, they needed the big places for people to live, I guess. And
well,
the government bought it and they built them.
But it was during the build-up in World War II, wasn't it?
That's right.
So were they mostly civilians?
Well, there were people who came to work mostly for the government. Then those people went away and other people moved in more local.
Oh.
But that used to be a farm that my father's brother rented for years from Lewis. And the big house he lived in, and the great big barn with the, where he went up a hill into the barn, all that, they tore that all down. But the good house he lived in, they tore that down and built those little funny. Why do they come and do such things? It was a shame to tear down that house. But they did. The trees still stand that used to be around it. I look at them when I go by. My father's older brother rented that, and he raised sheep there. But then, as I told you, his wife died, and he gave up farming. He never was a person who worked like my father worked hard, but he was sort of a gentleman farmer, you know. He sat red on the porch, went out to see what the men were doing. You aren't prosperous that way. You've got to get right down with the people and work. Is that right? That's what I always did, and it worked.
What about the island out here in the middle of the Susquehanna River?
That's an island that's gone to waste. It should never should. It's a beautiful island. It should have been built on. Now, they'd either have to run another bridge, or what my opinion would be, to run a down bridge, I mean road, down off it, onto the island.
Mm-hmm.
That could be done for not so much money.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that, but they should do it.
Mm.
That's beautiful land, and it's not used at all. And I don't know who owns it and who pays taxes on it. It could be made the most beautiful place to live you ever saw. The trees in my lifetime have grown up when they were little on that bridge was put in there. And now you look, they're above the bridge. That's how big the trees are. And we don't have those floods, so there's no reason. They would once to be used for school. And then that was discontinued. I don't know why.
Was it a public school?
No, no. It was to be in some sort of a college, I understand. I don't know who it belonged to or what was that, but that fell through long before my time, but I always heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
But to have all that land out there going to waste seems a shame. Such a beautiful place. If you want to see the river beautiful, look where the old dump used to be. Look right 40 and around into there,
mm-hmm.
where the Catholic school got right that way.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic discontinued that about 20 years ago, but it used to be the place where you took trash,
mm-hmm.
on the Harford side, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, have you ever been up to Angels Hill Cemetery?
Many times.
Now, why was that put up there like that? Do you know?
Well, it was at one time, you know, Habergrass only lost by one vote to be the capital of the United States. You knew that, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were going to have the capital up on that hill that is now the cemetery, which would have overlooked the whole bay and everything. It's a beautiful view from up there.
Hmm.
This would have been a beautiful place for it, because we have such a mighty river here.
Mm-hmm.
And could have taken on all that high land. It would have been a wonderful place to build buildings. You could go over this hill and see the bay out, like at your feet. It's beautiful.
Hmm. Have you been up to Zion Hill?
Zion Hill?
Zion. It's Montgomery Green's house. It's
oh,
up
yes.
That way.
Yes, many times.
Now that's...
My son almost bought that house one time.
Hmm.
But the barn was very close to it, and it was going to be retained by the people that owned it, and who wanted to have a great big house up against a barn? It ruined it.
Yeah.
That place was built by John Mitchell, who was a distant cousin of my father's, that house.
Hmm.
And that's the reason he thought he'd like to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, there was John Rogers.
Yes.
Now,
Mrs. Rogers used to belong over here to St. John's Church. She was a very nice lady.
Oh.
She had three sons. Had bad luck with all of them.
Hmm.
I don't know why. One disappeared. And one was the man who was an aviator, tried to go to Awoya. Remember? And he ran out of gas and went down. But his mother, fortunately, had given him something that you convert seawater into drinking water, which he didn't want to take, but she insisted. And that's really what saved their lives. Those men were down on the ground, on the water, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
and they expect to make a voyage, but they were rescued. Then another son she had flew a plane to Philadelphia and went down on a simple trip like that. The plane went down and killed him. Isn't that awful? Mm.
Well, let's see. We've talked about Mayor McElhenney? Do you remember him?
He lived in this house right here back of me for years, and later on he bought a brick up here half a block over. Mm. He was a nice man in a way, but he was a very strange person. He didn't have a cellar out here, and he got me to give him permission to come in and dig a big place on my land and to take the dirt out so he could have a furnace on, which I did. And he was to spread the dirt. Instead of that, he put the dump, little piles here, which would cost me money to spread. And then after he finished this job, I had to go ahead and spread most of it. Then after he finished the job, the man went up to Bel Air and sued me for $2,500 because I was higher than he was and the water was going in his new cellar off my land. Honestly, did you ever hear such a thing after me let him do it? So then I went to Wilmington and I bought these antique bricks and I built that brick fence to keep the water from running over his cellar. But it cost me money. After me letting him dig his cellar on my land and he didn't fill it nice, I had to spend a lot of money. You know, they dig it all out and then it sinks and sinks, you know, and didn't do it right. But I got it fixed myself. But I put the brick fence between his house and mine, which he didn't particularly like. But anyhow, that finished the argument of any water because I was higher anyhow. That's what the judge said. He didn't give him any money from me. But I'm already higher than he was. He's lower toward the river, you know. Now, it wasn't my fault that he dug this hole in the water. It was coming down through this loose dirt into his new cellar. Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny? You get so you wouldn't do anything for anybody anymore. You wouldn't trust him. Mm-hmm. But other than that, he turned out pretty good as a mayor, I think. Another thing he did to me, he didn't want me to have garbage cans out here, which I now have to have. So I built an incinerator out here. Brick. Cost me over $500. And a man from over northeast, a good bricklayer, and it was a nice one. So then he comes up with the idea that the smoke from this incinerator was annoying to him, I'd have to go up higher. So I wound up above his house, which cost a lot more money. Then he went to the mayor and all, and he had a law made. You couldn't use incinerators in this central part of Havertagrass. And I had to go back to the garbage cans. He wouldn't let me burn anything out there. And there was a high thing above his house. All this paper and trash, you know. Wasn't that funny? So he wanted me to tear it down. I wouldn't tear it down for years and years. I never tore it down until he sold this house and moved up there. Then I tore it down. I didn't use it, but I didn't tear it down. Oh, the things that people do, especially to a woman in business, you wouldn't believe the difference. You pay more to the men that work for you. They do less work for you. They resent a woman boss. And not that I boss them. I'm very kind and nice. But the fact that you're a woman and they're employed by you, you know, some men, not all, but most men do resent a little bit. A woman in business is telling them how to build a house, for instance, mm-hmm. or anything. That sounds funny to you? No. It's true.
Well, do you remember the suffragettes and getting the right to vote?
Yes, I remember I wasn't allowed to vote. The colored men could, but the white women couldn't. You remember that? Mm-hmm. When they first passed the law, they allowed the colored men to vote. And then after many years, they let the white women vote and the colored women.
Do you remember were there any women's demonstrations for, you know, women voting around here?
Not to my knowledge. My father's sister, a school teacher, I remember she talked very strongly of women's rights when I was little. But I always believed in them. I didn't need anybody to tell me that. I think if you do equal work, you ought to get equal pay. And I think if you run a business and you do the best you can and pay everybody, you should be regarded as an ordinary person, not whether you're a man, woman, or child. That's the only thing I got against, but I managed to survive all that. But I recognize the fact that there is a judgment against you. A lot of people, especially ignorant men, I don't think the more educated men feel that way anymore, but the others do. Mm.
Do you remember the Prohibition?
Oh, yes.
What was that like?
Well, it was ridiculous for one thing, because as far as I know, most people who owned a drink, they drank anyhow. They bought this white-looking material. I forget what they called it, moonshine, I think, or something. And they'd go over in Cecil County in nice cars, ladies. I've seen them do it, known them to do it. And buy this stuff and have parties in their house. They really were so defiant, all of them, especially, the men and women were both drinking. But anyhow, they really drank just as much, and some of them acted like they were in defiance of the government. They drank more than some people didn't drink before I started drinking, as a matter of showing independence. What do you think it was made them do that? Mm. I never drank, so it didn't make any difference to me.
I don't know. I think it didn't last very long.
No, it didn't. It was several years, though. Long enough to find it wasn't working. All it did really was cut out the government getting the money that they get in revenue from the liquor, and it went to the bootleggers. Mm-hmm. Cecil County had a lot of bootleggers, more than Harvard County.
Mm. Now, what would they do? Set up a...
Well, I don't know exactly. One time I went out with a gentleman, and we went to a nightclub up near Rising Sun. And of course, I don't drink. I drank Coca-Cola and had club sandwiches, stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was a very nice man. I hadn't known him very long. And he had a lot of money on him, which I didn't know. So he said to me, I used to like to drive an automobile a great deal. And he said, I've been driving all day. You want to drive? I said, sure. So I drove. He had a brand new big automobile. So we started coming home from there. He was staying down here at this hotel. Pearl Mitchell used to run the Colonial. It's now a Christner's home or something other for sick people. It used to be a nice hotel. So he was staying there, and he said, you drive, and I'll take it from when you get home. So we're coming along, you know, regular gait, and I noticed a little Ford automobile following us. I said, those people are following us. And he said, yes, they are. He says, I'm sure they are. So he said, just stay in the middle of the road, and they will cut us off. So they came faster and faster, and I went faster and faster, and I was going terrible fast on the country road finally, because they kept trying to go around me. And it was a little broken down looking automobile that had some kind of an engine in that was magnificent, but no better than what I was driving. But anyhow, when I got down, I kept cutting them off, and I got down to Aiken Avenue in Perryville. Then they turned off and went back. They never caught me. But he had a lot of money in the car. He was a man who owned shoe outlets. And he had collected money. Now those people, whether they knew he had all that money or what, I don't know. But he took out the money in this place to pay for what we ate. And whether he showed too much money or what, anyhow, they followed us. But when they got to Aiken Avenue, I was right in Perryville, ready to go to that other bridge that used to be there. Then they turned around and went. Never caught us. Wasn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
That was a wild experience. I never had that happen before. And we didn't have time for him to change over, and I was driving anyhow. But... I never forgot that. It was the nearest experience I ever had to anybody trying to rob you on the road. Just think of it. And then it was in the paper a few weeks later where people had been held up with people in small automobiles. But that engine they had was magnificent. I could hear it. You know, they'd try to cut to this side and they'd try to cut to that side. So I just watched them in the mirror and I cut them off. They never touched us. They just followed us right up against them. They were almost touching me. Wasn't that an experience? But it was fun. Oh, man.
Let's see. Is there anything else we could talk about?
Well, you do the suggestion, what you're interested in. I don't know. We could probably talk a week. You know,
well,
on different subjects.
I'm curious about the arbors and the grape arbors and things.
Yes.
There's an awful... There seems like there's a lot to have to grace. Do you know why?
Well, people made grape with them, and some people made wine with it.
Hmm.
We used to make grape jelly with them. There was one in this house, but we had to move it when we made that sun porch.
Mm-hmm.
Dispose of it. I've always been sorry we lost it. It was in nice grapes.
Hmm. That seems like... You go around, I think the Vandiver house has a big one.
Mm-hmm.
They
were very nice. They had benches under them, you know, and they were open like, and yet they had, some of them had roofs, open like roofs, but some sort of type of roof. And people would sit there in the evening, very, very nice. If the mosquitoes didn't get you, you had a good time. We used to have a lot of mosquitoes in Havergal, but the city started spraying. We don't have them at all. Never had a mosquito bite for several years. We got them conquered. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
I used to love to sit out front, you know, and the mosquitoes would be terrible. People burn little things, little lamps, like, try to keep them away. Didn't do too good.
I don't want to. Do you probably eat? Do you eat at a certain time?
No, we just eat when we're ready. Cause there's nobody here to eat but this lady now.
Okay, well I didn't.
My son's gone for the day.
I didn't want to.
What time is it now?
It's 12:15. I didn't.
No, I don't have any special time. Would you like a cup of coffee or something?
No.
Or tea or whatever?
No, I'm fine.
All right.
I sort of feel like I've talked you out, and I don't want to.
I'm all right as long as you are. If there's anything you want to know, now's the time to find out.
I am to the end of, I can't think of anything else to ask you.
Well, that's good.
You've really covered an awful lot.
I tried to.
You have some really colorful memories, a very beautiful childhood.
I did. I enjoyed my childhood very much.
You're very observant. You really remember things.
Yes,
you know, so many people that when they live, they don't really observe things. And you seem like you really observe.
I remember an awful lot of things. I could talk for a week.
There's nothing. Would it be all right if I took your picture?
Certainly.
Okay.
If you can stand it.
Oh, sure. Tell me again, what's the name?
This man was a man who founded and was the superintendent and paymaster of this canal that ran from Wrightsville to Havergal. And he was a very wonderful person. They had 12 children. Imagine that. 10 boys and 2 girls all grew up and all went away to fine schools. He was a very fine man, that man.
Hmm.
I admire him very much.
Yes. And what was his name?
His name was Daniel Faree Shure, S-H-U-R-E. That's what Shure spelled his name for.
That's so sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to I'll take that too. Copy it from here. I don't even have to.
Would you like to look at some family, it's cold upstairs, would you like to look at some family portraits up there? Are you interested in that? On the main floor of that house, that part of the house I'm not living in right now because I don't run steps.
Right.
But I can make a trip and show you if you want to see the portraits.
Well, really, what I'd be more interested in, anything that shows the area.
Area. Uh-huh. I'm afraid I don't have any that I know of. I have many things put away, but I couldn't possibly come up with them. They're parked and, you know, in suitcases and put away long. I have no place to keep them.
Oh, sure. Okay.
You understand that.
Yeah. Okay, do you want to sit over?
Any place?
Where would you prefer to sit?
I don't care.
Take this out.